Would you tell us where we are?
Normally, I think 20 minutes is not enough. Today, I wonder if 20 minutes is twice too much.
Or better yet, do we have to be here?
Right. So what has happened here is that this entire appeal, both their side and ours, is predicated on an improper and erroneous use of the abstention doctrine by Judge Hike in the Western District. That has now been sort of upended by the fact that the insurance company, my client, has now been sued under the direct action statute. The entire predicate of this appeal from Century's perspective was the absence of parallel state proceedings. We did not have a place to litigate our coverage issue other than the U.S. District Court where we filed this declaratory judgment action. Now we do have a place because we have been sued by the direct action plaintiffs in the underlying case. So now that Century is part of the underlying state case in the 15th JDC, Century's position here is that it's no longer pursuing its appeal of Judge Hike's ruling because there are parallel state proceedings. And under the Wilton Brilhart cases, it's pretty clear that that currently there is a basis to abstain in the district court level, and I presume that this court would agree that abstention under the circumstances is appropriate. And so where we are today is that last week Century attempted to dismiss its appeal and also attempted to ask the court to dismiss the appeal of Soham, it's insured, so that we could all go to state court and litigate this. Now, it's important for you all to know that Soham has not yet made an appearance in the underlying state case to allege what it wants to allege against Century. In pertinent part, in the district court case, Soham actually not only filed an answer, but they filed a counterclaim for bad faith and unfair trade practices. And so that the record is clear, those causes of action are not in play yet in the state court action.
Well, they say they can't assert the coverage claims in state court. Why is that?
I don't know, Your Honor, because I think they can.
Mr. Fazio knows.
Right. I think they can assert them, and I presume if this court agrees with me and Century that the underlying case should be dismissed as Judge Hike said it should, then they will assert those causes of action in the state court case.
Well, is there anything now, in light of these developments, that is before us from Judge Hike's ruling?
Yes, and that's where this gets a bit complicated, Judge. So what we've got is a memorandum ruling by the district court that did two things. One, it granted Century's motion to dismiss the bad faith and unfair trade practices claims. And two, it sua sponte decided that the court was going to abstain from jurisdiction. All right, so you have a two-part memorandum ruling. The fact that the district court granted the motion to dismiss the bad faith claims technically means that that is before you, irrespective.
Yeah, well, those eventually were without prejudice, is that correct?
They were without prejudice, Your Honor, but it's a bit complicated there as well, because what Judge Hike said is that he was saying that his ruling was without prejudice to bring bad faith claims for prospective behavior of the insurance company. I think if you read his supplemental ruling, it's clear that he was not backing off of his grant of our motion to dismiss on the pleadings themselves. The allegations in the answer / counterclaim and the motion to dismiss, I think, still stands, and the record is pretty clear on that.
Are you saying I'm sorry.
Why can't those claims be asserted in the now cured state court parallel proceeding?
Because they've been adjudicated, Your Honor. I think that the fact that the district court granted the motion to dismiss
with prejudice.
With prejudice as to the bad faith allegations in the counterclaim means that those are gone. And so, yes, those are on appeal here, and we can talk about those claims and the factual and legal predicate behind them, but they were dismissed with prejudice before the court sua sponte abstained from jurisdiction. So I'm happy to address that part of the appeal, and we can talk more about the abstention doctrine if you like, but since Century is agreeing that the case now should be sent to state court, I don't want to waste anyone's time. So on the bad faith issues, the counterclaim alleged some fairly unusual allegations of bad faith. First, the factual predicate is as follows. Century sent a reservation of rights letter. That is actually alleged to be in bad faith. Century, my client, knew that the reservation of rights letter was somehow illegitimate and did not properly quote the policy provisions. The other factual predicate is that Century knew that the reservation of rights letter was unintelligible. Since I wrote it, it's certainly possible that it's confusing, but unintelligible was a little insulting. Also, that Century knew that we would confuse and confound our insured, Soham. Finally, the allegation is that we knew that this reservation of rights letter somehow changed the obligations under the contract. There was no factual foundation for any of those allegations, not just that anything about the reservation of rights letter was incorrect or ambiguous, but obviously all of these allegations suggest that Century knew what it was doing when it committed these bad faith acts. The trial court, the district court, picked up on the fact that there was no factual support for any of these allegations, and there's obviously no legal support for any of these allegations falling within the two statutory provisions of Louisiana law that deal with bad faith, 22-1973 and 22-18.
Did Century file a Rule 11 letter on that?
No, Century simply filed a motion to dismiss, Your Honor, and that is the sum and substance of what Century has done to essentially attack the allegations made in the counterclaim. But the district court did hold that those allegations were frivolous, which is a relevant question for you all because...
Were what?
Were frivolous. Were in fact frivolous because...
That's why I asked my Rule 11 question.
Right, and we chose not to send a Rule 11 letter. It was considered, Your Honor, and discussed with the client. But the finding that the allegations in the complaint and in the counterclaim were frivolous is important for Your Honors because of the difference between the Colorado River Doctrine and the Wilton Brilhart Doctrines. Because technically speaking, this court has to decide what was the appropriate abstention doctrine to be applied to the bad faith claims as well. To the allegations of declaratory judgment that Soham raised.
So if the test wasn't applied properly, the Colorado River standard, do we need to remand?
If for some reason this court found that the court abused its discretion in any part of its abstention, it would need to remand. But I'm here to tell you that there is no basis under either the Colorado River doctrine, which is the more lenient in terms of federal jurisdiction, or the Wilton Brilhart doctrine, which is the more stringent. I am saying that the Wilton Brilhart doctrine should apply to this case now that there are parallel state proceedings and because these allegations made.
Now you've left the counterclaims. You're talking about the abstention.
I am talking about the counterclaims as well, and the reason I am is because...
I got lost.
Yeah, I know. It's confusing. we are actually saying that there is no place for the counterclaims also to be litigated at this point in federal court. Now, I've also made clear that the ruling is final, so there's a little bit of a contradiction here. But to the extent that the court in any part of Soham's counterclaim abstained from hearing those claims, it's important that the court apply the appropriate test, whether it's the Wilton line or the Colorado River line. And because the counterclaim allegations made were frivolous, there is case law in the Fifth Circuit that makes very clear that you have to look at the Wilton line of decisions and not the Colorado River line.
Is there any reason that this court can't affirm that part of the district court's ruling that they were frivolous and were dismissed with prejudice?
No, there is no reason, and that, frankly, is what we're asking. It would help streamline the state court action when, in fact, Soham does make an appearance and make its claims. Nobody is saying that Soham cannot make prospective allegations of bad faith, although I sure hope they're not related to reservation of rights letters, because we've done all we can to reach out to this insured, give them a defense, and try to get this issue, the coverage issue, litigated. Yes, I think that this court should, in fact, affirm the district court's bad faith ruling. And I've not even touched upon the unfair trade practices issue. It's a little too simple, frankly, to have to even argue, but I will, just so that we're complete in the record here. There's no question that there's no private right of action by Soham to bring a Louisiana unfair trade practices claim against us, notwithstanding one early Fifth Circuit decision on that issue. It appears that the Louisiana state courts are very clear, and subsequent district courts are very clear, that there is no private right of action to be maintaining a Louisiana unfair trade practices claim.
So, against an insurance company.
Against an insurance company, right. So I wanted to make sure I made that clear. That was the second part of the district court's grant of our motion to dismiss. I don't have anything further unless your honors do.
Thank you.
Okay.
For the record, Your Honor, it's Anthony Fazio for Soham. When Judge Hike ruled on the issue of bad faith, it had little or nothing to do with the underlying facts of the case. If it did have something to do with the facts of the case, what we should have been allowed to do is amend the petition to see if we could allege more facts to bring it within the jurisdiction of the court. What he did do, and this is the reversible error in the case, he looked at 1973 and he misapplied the law of Louisiana relative to an insured's claim for bad faith against the insurer. And he misapplied it in two ways. The first way that he did it is he interpreted 1973A as not being a standalone cause of action for bad faith. The second way that he did it is he agreed with Century, which is now clearly wrong, that in order to bring a claim, an insured must bring a claim under one of the six causes of actions stated in 1973B. And he looked at 1973B1, and he said, you possibly have a claim there, but that misrepresentation of fact must be a misrepresentation of fact relative to the policy itself. Now, Terrio, which is the seminal case on all of these issues, clearly was against Century in this case, and clearly was contrary to Judge Hike's ruling. We know that now because Your Honors, on another panel, certified a question to the Louisiana Supreme Court in Kelly versus State Farm, asking them those very questions. is there a cause of action for an insured that stand alone by itself under 1973A? And our Louisiana Supreme Court, quoting Theriault, which I quoted to Judge Hike, they answered that saying, yes, there is. The second question they answered in certification was whether or not an insured was required to pick one of the six possible causes of action under 1973B. There again, my argument to Judge Hike was that Theriault settled that issue. We had a general claim. We were not limited to the six causes of action, and the Supreme Court in Kelly answered that saying we were not limited to the six causes of action in 1973B, that this has to do with the general obligation of good faith and fair dealing that an insurer owes the insured. The third way that Judge Hike analyzed this, and I think it was clearly wrong, is he said that if you are going to pursue a claim under 1973B1, a misrepresentation of facts, that that misrepresentation of facts must relate to the insurance policy. And in Kelly, the Supreme Court said it does not, it is not limited to simply misrepresentations concerning facts about the insurance policy, but misrepresentation of any fact that's pertinent to the underlying insurance policy.
You want to give us the particular discrete facts that you alleged in this claim of bad faith?
Yes, and they were in, generally in two ways. Number one, in the reservation of rights letter, Century tells Soham that if they are successful in claiming that there is no insurance coverage, that they have a right to get back from Soham the cost of the defense of that case, which included attorney's fees. There's clearly no basis for that. I've been at this for 30 plus years. I've never seen an insurer in Louisiana ever make a claim against an insured for repayment of the cost of defense. And there's a practical reason for that. Soham had no choice in the selection of defense counsel. Soham has very little input with defense counsel. We have no complaints about the way that counsel for Soham has defended the case. But in this instance, the same adjuster that Soham talks to is the adjuster that's handling also the bad faith claim. And so what's confounding to them is that when they speak to their lawyer or when they speak to other persons involved in the defense of this case, they're confused about who they're speaking to. And what's disconcerting to them is the thought that at the end of this, after they've paid all of this money to try and sort it out at the district court level, that they may be presented with a bill for several hundred thousand dollars that Century wants to get back from them because of the insurance, an allegation or perhaps even a judgment that there was no coverage.
Well, if you're right about the law, there's no exposure.
Pardon me?
If you are correct about the law that the insurance company can't do that, then they've got no exposure.
Well, they don't, which is why we say that there is no parallel litigation. We spent all of this money to get it to the point. We didn't come to federal court voluntarily. We didn't assert the counterclaims as a way of getting around Brillhart. What we did, it was compulsory counterclaims. It was clear in the face of the reservation of rights letter that they were changing the policy. Here's how they changed the policy. There are two provisions in that policy, or there are two spots in the policy. One in which Century says they will be responsible for their own cost. A second one says that if Soham had an indemnity that also has a claim, that they will be responsible for the cost of the defense of the indemnity, even the cost of providing an attorney. So they tried to change that policy provision They tried to write out of it clear instances in which they said that they would be responsible for their own cost. But when you look at the mold provision, which is the provision that they cite for the denial of coverage, that has nothing to do with the underlying facts in this case. Each one of those things, and I raised to Judge Hike the issue of eudem generis, which is the Louisiana Supreme Court expression, that you cannot simply have a generic expression such as toxic and have that apply to the exclusion of coverage. In this particular case, if we had been given an opportunity to amend, if I had known that that's where this was going to go, we certainly would have called all three of those provisions into question. So what Judge Hike did when he raised the issue of frivolous, he had nothing to do with the underlying factual issue. It had everything to do with an erroneous interpretation of Terrio, and it had everything to do with an erroneous belief that there was no standalone cause of action for bad faith, and if there was a claim under 1971B1, it had to relate to policy provisions. That was the way that he got around the issue of eustem generis. That was the way that he got around the issue of whether or not they could be, Soham could be liable for attorney's fees.
You said 1971, you mean 1973?
73, I'm sorry, Judge. So my point is, when Judge Hike was faced with the issue again for his second opinion, I think he understood that what he did in the case was he should have used the Colorado River case. He should have made the analysis along the lines of Colorado River. And now he was in a difficult position. He clearly did not want to entertain the case. He had to figure a way of getting rid of it, and he had to figure a way of getting rid of it without the apparent damage that's been done to Soham in the original analysis. I disagree with Mr. Sever in terms of whether or not all claims were dismissed with prejudice, because I think what he did in the second opinion is he tried to undo everything he had done in the first opinion except for a sua sponte abstention. And he still, even in that context, used the wrong analysis. He should have gone back to the Colorado River analysis. It went even further, though, because we had not only claims for bad faith and unfair trade practice, and I will mention that in a minute, but we had a claim for breach of contract, we had a claim for detrimental reliance, which was Soham. This case has been going on for several years. The attempt to deny coverage is like 2014. It came from nowhere. And so these people were very upset that after several years of participating in the trial court litigation, they now had to go fight it in federal court. At the point that Judge Hike was faced with the improper dismissal of these things, he was in a difficult position. He did not use the right analysis. But he also had companion claims of breach of contract, detrimental reliance, and he just simply dismissed them. Nobody complained about them. Sentry did not file a Rule 12 challenge to those claims. No one said anything about them. He just dismissed them sua sponte as well. Now, the whole point of this appeal is the jurisdiction of federal court. And if I understand the tests that are being used, one of the issues that you look at is how did the case get here? Well, the case got here because Sentry brought it here, not because Soham filed the suit. The second thing you look at is whether or not there really is parallel litigation below. And I think you understand now why we're concerned about about conceding the issue of just simply dismissing this appeal. They're interpreting the judge's decision, which was based on a misreading of Terrio. We now know crystal clear in terms of what Kelly says. They're interpreting that to mean all of our bad faith claims are gone except for, quote, new ones. Now, at the very least, let's just assume for a moment that there's some basis for their argument. At the very least, we should have been given an opportunity to amend that petition and see if we could allege very specifically the basis for the bad faith.
Let me ask you in that.
I'm sorry.
What would you have said? What would you have, what specific allegations, if you were allowed to?
Well, I would have said, I would have approached it in two different ways. When Century filed this case, they filed it to deny coverage, to deny the defense and deny indemnity. The difference, and Judge Hike kind of vaguely refers to it when he mentions the eight corners rule. If they had just challenged the defense based upon the underlying petition that the plaintiff in the other case filed, that plaintiff did use the word toxic. But they carried it one step further. They asked for a ruling on indemnity. When you get down into the issue of indemnity, now you get into actual facts. In other words, maybe the plaintiff got confused, maybe the plaintiff didn't understand what he was dealing with and he used the word toxic ill-advisedly. But in fact, this is a very common substance that was in this cup. This is a very, if you eat black olives for a meal, you get black olives that have been soaked in sodium hydroxide, which is what was in this cup. It's all over your house. It's everywhere. So the point is, what would we have alleged? We'd have gone into more detail on the facts of the case, the underlying facts of the case that makes the reservation of rights letter not only clearly wrong, but Century knew those underlying facts by this point in time. They had a chemical analysis done by the police in Lafayette, Louisiana. They knew what the chemical was. They knew that it probably would not rise to the level of anything within the mold exclusion because it's a compound. It's not an organic substance, and it's not a mineral, which that particular section of the insurance policy refers to. So we would have alleged more facts along that line. I would have also, and may very well go back and do this, talk to that insurance defense lawyer, because I'm almost confident that what he will say is that he did not tell these folks that, or he did not agree with the statement in the reservation of rights letter that somehow they would be responsible for his bill. So I alleged it based upon what I could at that point in time, but I had no idea that it was going to blossom into this. If I had given an opportunity to amend, I would have put all of these facts before the judge.
Counsel, taking the case where it is today, what ruling do you say we should enter that would put this case in the right posture and in the right court?
I think you need to remand the case, reverse Judge Hike on his decision to use Brillhart as the basis. Colorado River is the appropriate analysis. The case should go back to the district court. His dismissal of the claims, whether you call them dismissal with prejudice or a dismissal without prejudice, should be reversed, and the case should now be lodged in district court where it started. Now, at that point in time, I would imagine that everybody can file motions and do all of this other stuff, but at least we will have an opportunity to present our claims.
In the status report you both filed a few days ago, the last paragraph talks about what Soham cannot do in the underlying case. Will you explain what that is?
Well, part of it is what Mr. Sever just alleged. In other words, the position they've taken is our claims in Judge Hike's court for bad faith, for a misstatement about what's in the policy concerning defense costs, and a misstatement about what the underlying substance is that makes it fall within this exception, those claims are gone. They would take the position that we can't, nobody can assert those.
Are you saying that paragraph is based on your interpretation that the claims have been dismissed with prejudice?
That's actually based on my reading of Century's briefs through this whole thing. I think the position that they're going to take is the position that they took to Your Honors just now, that their position is that all my claims for bad faith have been dismissed with prejudice. It's a final judgment. It can't be even entertained by the state court judge. But the problem is we're not in the state court. So Soham on the issue of insurance is not there. And Mr. Parkinson, who is defending Soham, being paid, he's being paid, he's the insurance defense lawyer being paid by Century, he'd have an ethical problem making a claim against Century for bad faith. He simply couldn't do it. The issue of the plaintiff in that case making a bad faith claim, that is the issue of Kelly. In other words, maybe if there's a big judgment later, you can assign the claim to him, but technically he doesn't have that ability. So we would have to intervene or somehow insert ourselves in that case. The problem with that is these folks have been damaged. We're here talking about this after an entire year, and to thought that somehow we can go back to state court and have this done is unrealistic. We're not there, and it simply cannot be done. And I think what you heard him say is exactly the position that they will take, and that is those claims are over. I cannot overemphasize the fact that if you read Judge Hike's opinions in both the first instance and in the second instance, his decision to dismiss those bad faith claims were based upon Century's explanation of Terrio, which is now clearly wrong. My position at that time is the position that now the Supreme Court has said is the correct one. So great damage will be done to these folks by not reversing Judge Hike. And I submit to you, if the Barrett case, which you all decided, and Colorado River case mean anything, then the issue is there should be great weight given to these standalone claims that Soham has brought against Century. And it shouldn't be easy to just simply dismiss those the way Judge Hike did, especially when he had an opportunity to say, okay, amend your petition, give me some more facts, if that was truly his reason. But I don't think that was his reason. His reason for doing it, he just misinterpreted Terrio. We now know under Kelly, I was correct.
Few things. First of all, the trial court did address 1973A and the enumerated offenses B. I don't think anything in the judgment granting the motion to dismiss is contrary to Kelly at all. What we were faced with in this case is whether any of these causes of action, all of which relate to a reservation of rights letter written by an insurance carrier, somehow allow penalties under Louisiana law. And the Kelly case correctly said that under 1973A, when an insurer fails to settle a case that it should settle, even though that's not one of the enumerated offenses, there's a violation of bad faith, and the penalties are whatever the difference is in the failure to settle in the actual judgment. That's long been Louisiana law. Here, what the court was looking at in the memorandum ruling is whether any of these things that we supposedly did wrong in the reservation of rights letter could fit within anything in Louisiana law. And district court actually cited subsection A of 1973 and said that there is a duty of good faith and fair dealing, and that there is an affirmative duty to make a reasonable effort to settle claims, which is what the Kelly case looked at. But then it said, look, the only thing under Louisiana bad faith law that this could fit in is B1. And I think the judge was absolutely correct in saying it, because when you look at the breadth of Louisiana bad faith law. The only thing that would come close to equating with these allegations in this bad faith counterclaim is a misrepresentation claim. And so what the judge did is say, based on Soham's allegations, only subsection B1 of 1973 could possibly be relevant. So there's nothing in there that suggests that this ruling is contrary to Kelly in any way, or that the judge is somehow discounting the possibility of other claims for bad faith that might fall out of that list under subsection B. He's merely saying that what he says, which is that this could only be a misrepresentation claim. And then he goes on to explain that this can't be misrepresentation.
Let us assume, errantly from your viewpoint, that we disagree and decide that ruling was incorrect. Is opposing counsel correct? Can these claims not be considered in the state court action in light of how representation is being handled there? And does it make sense for them to continue in federal district court?
It doesn't make sense for them to continue in federal district court. I think even under the Colorado River Doctrine, because you have parallel state proceedings, because we are going to be going along in the state court now litigating the coverage issue, because you're going to have conflicting rulings on both sides if you go ahead and remand this case back.
My colleagues in Louisiana probably would know, I'm not familiar with direct actions against insurance companies. Are bad faith claims brought in the direct actions litigation when the underlying tort is being pursued and the insurance company's there too?
They are. What happens is that the insured intervenes in one form or the other, or simply makes an appearance as a third party and alleges those claims. We certainly are not going to object to that. Soham is already technically a party, even though they're being defended by appointed defense counsel. The fact that they're already a party gives them the right to come in and claim whatever they want to claim.
They're named parties, but represented by Century paid attorney.
Correct, at this point. But I think in the future, if this case goes where I think it should go, they'll also be represented by coverage counsel and be able to make whatever allegations they can make that haven't been precluded by the ruling that's already been made on these frivolous allegations on the reservation of rights letter. I mean, the sum and substance of this is that somehow in Louisiana, an insurer cannot reserve its rights to file a declaratory judgment action at peril of bad faith. And because there are absolutely no factual allegations supporting such a claim or legal allegations supporting such a claim, the motion to dismiss was proper. If this party wants to make future bad faith claims based on something that happens in the future, they can have at it. But a reservation of rights letter, the reservation of rights to recover attorney's fees if they are allowed by Louisiana law, the reservation of rights under a clear provision allowing no coverage for toxic ingestion, these are basic factors that an insurance company does subject to a reservation all of the time, and it's not in bad faith.
Well, what would be the result if we read Judge Hike's judgment regarding their claims as dismissal without prejudice, and remand, whether it's Colorado River or whatever, sends it back to state court, do they have the right to appear there, intervene or whatever, and assert those same claims or only forward claims?
If this court finds that Judge Hike's decision allowed for the possibility to reassert the exact claims they brought in their counterclaim,
which is what without prejudice means, isn't it?
The only thing confusing about this decision, Your Honor, is what he meant by without prejudice. We think what he meant is you can bring prospective claims for bad faith for something they do in the future, but the stuff you said in your counterclaim is dismissed with prejudice. That's what we say. They're saying something else. But if Your Honors agree with Soham that they have a right to continue to make the claims they made in this case in the future, sure, they can appear in the state court action and make those same claims about bad faith in reserving rights. I can't.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you. That concludes our docket for the day. We'll be in recess until 9 o'clock in the morning.